are familiar, I think, with the comments of James in James chapter 3, where James talks about how hard the tongue is to control. He says that's almost the last thing to come under our control as we try to submit ourselves to the Lord's will in all of our lives. And I think most of us would agree that controlling what we say is a very difficult thing. But obviously it can be done, though difficult it is. Anytime we are tempted to say things that ought not to be said, the Bible teaches that there is always a way of escape with any temptation. And so we need to work harder than we many times do on availing ourselves of that way of escape from the temptation of misusing our tongue. I want us to talk for a little while this evening about some questions that we can ask ourselves that I think can help keep us from gossiping. Gossip, of course, is not the only sin that a person could commit in speech, but it is one that's very prevalent and one that the Bible talks about both in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 27, the proverb writer talked about the fact that gossip causes strife. It's one of those things in the world that separates people from one another who shouldn't be separated. Proverbs 16, verse 27 says, an ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lips like a burning fire. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates even the best of friends. In the New Testament, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, Paul talked about certain ones that were walking disorderly. And he says they were not only walking disorderly, he said they were busybodies, involving themselves in concerns that really weren't their concerns. And Paul uses the expression 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 13, when he talks about people who were saying things which they ought not. And I think that probably is the crux of the issue. Several years ago, I knew a person who, after some time that I had been around this person, I thought he just struck me as being a person of a very shy personality or temperament. He just didn't seem to have very much to say. And I'm always uncomfortable around people who don't have very much to say because that puts the burden on you to carry the conversation. And I just always chalked it up to the fact that this man just must have that kind of a personality. Come to find out, he just was the most careful person I believe I've ever met in not saying a lot of things that just don't need to be said. And it struck me that if all of us were as careful as he was about not saying things that ought not to be said, all of us would be a lot quieter than we are. He was quiet because he just refrained from saying a lot of things many people would go ahead and say. Well, I want us to think about some questions that I think can help filter out some of the things that shouldn't be said, some questions we can ask when we're tempted to say something that might at least give us pause to think whether that needs to be said or not. Now, I'm going to just generally define gossip as saying things that don't need to be said. Not always bad things, not always untrue things, but just things that don't need to be said. So first of all, maybe the most obvious question we ought to any time ask ourselves, we think about saying something as if it were true, is to ask whether we know that it is true. And notice that I word that by saying, how do I know that it's true? It's not enough to say that we think something's true or that we're pretty sure that it's true. But I think the value of truth, the importance of saying only that which is true, is so great that we need to put some rather strict filters in front of our mouth to double check sometimes before we say something that we think is true, but it might not be true and we just didn't know that it was not true. Lying, of course, is a serious problem. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, Paul talks about the need for the Christian to put away lying from his speech. Well, I doubt there are many people in the room tonight who would just deliberately misrepresent the truth. But the problem is, many times we carelessly misrepresent others by just passing along information that's not accurate, and we didn't take the time to check that out. We could have found out that it wasn't true if we had taken the time to ask this first question. Not only did I think it is true, but am I sure it's true? How do I know that that is a fact rather than a careless half-truth, perhaps, that somebody has passed along? Great damage can be done by passing along inaccurate information, even if we didn't mean to do that. Even if we thought it was true, but we just weren't as careful as we should be to validate the input, as the computer programmers say. You know, the quality of what you get out of a computer has a lot to do with the quality of the information you put into it. And so computer programmers talk about validating the input. By that they mean you don't just one time check to make sure this is right, but you double check it to make sure, to validate the fact that what goes in is that which should be. We can't afford to just assume that everything we hear is true, because a lot of it isn't. And we need to double check and to make sure that what we say, if it needs to be said for other reasons, is the truth. I think it's a rare person, myself included, who doesn't have room for improvement in our commitment to truth. If we apply a very strict standard of absolute factual truth to everything we say, a lot of us wouldn't say a lot of what we say. If for no other reason than that we weren't sure that that was true, and so we would leave it unsaid, lest we carelessly pass along some inaccurate information. But obviously, truth is not the only concern, is it? Secondly, we can ask, even if this is true, do I have to violate a confidence in order to pass on this information to somebody who maybe doesn't need to know this, because my passing it along would violate the trust of somebody who is counting on me not to share that with somebody else? The word trustworthy appears a lot of times in the Bible, doesn't it? Both in the Old Testament and the New. Romans chapter 1, verse 31, when Paul is listing all of that long list of the horrible sins of the pagan Gentile world, one of the sins on the list was that he says they weren't trustworthy. What does it mean to say that somebody is trustworthy? Well, it means that you could entrust something to them, whether it was information or maybe one of your possessions or whatever, you entrust it to them, and you don't have to worry whether they're going to take care of it or not. When I moved here, I entrusted a key to my house to Curtis and Terry Byers. Well, I could easily do that because I don't have any doubt that they will ever misuse that key. You know, go in there unannounced and steal some of my cornbread or something. I don't worry that they will abuse that trust. Well, all of us want to be trusted, don't we? We want people to perceive us as being trustworthy. But the thing is, be trustworthy, you've got to be worthy of being trusted. You've got to be a person who can be counted on not to abuse a trust. And one of the ways that many of us, just on a practical, everyday level, fail to be as trustworthy as we ought to, is that we carelessly, and I don't think intentionally, but many times carelessly, share with other people information that should have been kept in trust. It should have been kept private, as the private property of the person who entrusted that to us. There are a lot of proverbs that talk about the faithful spirit, or the trustworthy disposition. Proverbs 11 and verse 13 says, "A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter." You see the latter part of that verse? He who is of a faithful, that means trustworthy, spirit, conceals a matter. What does that mean? Well, it means to not reveal it, to keep it to oneself. And why does he do that? Well, in this case, it's because to share that, to reveal it, would be an act of unfaithfulness. It would be an act, you know, a violation of a trust agreement that that person had with somebody else. Confidence breaking is one of the worst things in the world. It's treachery. To violate a trust is to commit an act of traitorship. It's to commit treason in the level of personal relationships. It's to betray somebody who had put their trust in you and assume that you wouldn't betray that. So we need to think twice before we pass along information that has been entrusted to us in confidence. You may wish that the person that entrusted that to you never had entrusted it to you, and they may have used poor judgment in bringing you into their trust. And that maybe they shouldn't have passed it along to you. But if that's what took place, then you can stop the chain of communication right there by not passing it along to other people. I think the problem is most of us think we're always allowed one exception, aren't we, to trust agreements. Somebody entrusts a piece of juicy information to me, I'm not going to go out and tell everybody about that, but I somehow think that it's permissible for me to share that with one other person. And usually preface it by saying, don't tell anybody I told you this, but we tell it. And then what happens? Of course, that person thinks they've got one exception, so they relay it to one other person, and it just spreads like wildfire. So, how do I know it's true, first of all? And secondly, to share it, would I have to violate a confidence to tell it? But number three, what good need does my listener have for this information? It's wrong to, as the proverb writer says here in 11 verse 13, to reveal secrets when there is no constructive need for the person to have that information. I've run into this so much in gospel meetings when I will go places, many times places that I've never been before, and so you come in, people perceive you to be an objective outsider who's there, and nearly by the time you get someplace, you have people coming up to you after services and getting you off to the side and saying, Brother Henry, we've got a problem in this congregation that needs to be dealt with. And maybe they'll even mention somebody's name and say, you know, you need to preach on this subject while you're here because they need it. Just often want to say, well, what do you need? Let me preach something on that you need. Maybe on sharing information that didn't need to be shared. But I many times just want to say to people, what need do I have to know that? Maybe it's true. Maybe somebody needs to know about that in order to help the situation, but it might not be me. You know, it might be me, and if I can help, I'm always willing to try to do that. But not everybody needs every item of information. Particularly if there's a problem involved, almost always there is somebody, maybe one individual, maybe a very small number of individuals, who are in the very best position to help with a problem. And they need to get the information so that they can help. But that doesn't mean that everybody needs to have that information. Just because somebody needs to hear it doesn't mean that everybody does. And so before I go out just indiscriminately sharing information about some problem or some thing that needs to be dealt with, I need to ask whether the person that I'm telling this to, whether they need to hear this. It may be, but it may not be. Ephesians 4, verse 29, talks about the problem of idle talk. Talk that just serves no useful purpose. And Paul says that we need to strive rather, as he says, to speak that which is good for necessary edification. Boy, that's a challenging standard, isn't it? To only say that which builds up and truly does help. If we applied that filter to our speech, filtered out anything that didn't need to be said for some good purpose, something that was really going to help, then a lot of things would be filtered out. We would say much less than many times we do say. But then, here's another question. Even if it's true, even if I don't have to violate a confidence to tell this, and even if the person that I'm talking to may need to get this information, am I the one who should be conveying that information to that person? Maybe not. You know? Maybe it's somebody else who needs to be dealing with that set of circumstances. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 15. The busybody is a person who's wrongfully concerned about, as Peter says, other people's matters. Situations and circumstances that maybe involve a problem and somebody needs to be dealing with it, but it might not be me. Let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. I think sometimes there's almost a pride issue when we just can't imagine that a situation could be handled without my involvement. I've got to be involved. They've got to have my help. This can't be resolved unless I get in there and help. Well, appreciate the spirit of helpfulness sometimes that people have. But my experience with serious personal problems is that a very limited number of people need to be involved, at least in the early going. That may need to broaden out later on and other people's help be enlisted. But in the early going, the more sensitive a problem is, the more the person who has that problem needs to be confronted by those who have the very best possible relationship with that person and those who have the best chance of being heard. And so if I'm your best friend, and I'm the person who has the most credibility with you, and you would listen to me, maybe if you wouldn't listen to anybody else, the problem comes up in your life, I may have some responsibility to go and talk to you about something that nobody else would have the responsibility to talk to you about because they are not as close to you as I am. They wouldn't have the chance of helping you that I do. But we need to be careful before we just assume, well, I need to get involved here. That's what being a busybody is. It's injecting ourselves into situations, even into conversations, where our help is just not needed and maybe even would be counterproductive. But boy, it takes wisdom, doesn't it, to discern whether the responsibility of saying something is somebody else's rather than our own. I've got a very painful situation in my personal life right now with a person who's very near and dear to me who has felt the need to say some things to me that I believe are not based on a faithful way of looking at the situation, a mistaken notion of some teaching about the scriptures in regard to some things. But to this person's credit, they believe that because of their close relationship with me, they had a right to say something that maybe others wouldn't have any responsibility to say just because of the closeness of the relationship. And as painful as it is to hear what this person has to say, and as off base as I think the comments are, I deeply respect a person who cares enough about your soul to say something that would even jeopardize the relationship if it came to that, simply so that you could hear the things that you need to hear and if necessary, make the required corrections. But not everybody needs to do that. And it takes wisdom, as well as a great deal of humility, to look at a circumstance and to make a wise decision about whether I'm the one who needs to be talking and getting involved in those circumstances. I think before involving ourselves in somebody else's problem, a lot of times it's good to ask whether we've earned the right to be involved in that person's situation by the active love that we have shown to them previously. People come to me with something that they say, that it's going to be painful for me to say and it's going to be painful for you to hear, but I come to you because I love your soul. A lot of times I just have to ask, well, what's the evidence prior to this coming up that you love my soul? You know, a lot of times these are people that have no track record of ever having shown any concern before, but now they suddenly are concerned about your soul. Well, the right to be heard by people who have some problem usually has to be earned. And as Abraham Lincoln said, he has the right to criticize who has the heart to help. And the people who will listen to you when a painful conversation needs to be held are those to whom you've already proved your active concern when the sun was shining. You know, when there wasn't a problem, they've shown their active and their sacrificial love for you. It's been more than just words. And now, when a painful conversation needs to be held, you listen to them because they have built a track record with you of active love. If I'm not the person that needs to be going and doing the talking and doing the criticizing, then I need to zip my lip. And if I were to go and say things maybe that somebody else needs to be saying, for me to go and involve myself in that would be to be gossiping. Be for me to be saying things that I don't need to be saying. And then finally, maybe here's the toughest one to give an honest answer to, what are my motives for telling this? I pass along information to somebody else. Why am I doing that? It takes a person of above average honesty to answer that question without any hint of self-deception. It is easy, isn't it, to say, well, I'm passing this information along because it needs to be passed along, and I just only want to do good with that. Well, that's all well and good if that's true, but as I say, it takes a person of above average honesty to look in the mirror and see whether that really is the reason or there might not be some other things going on. More often than I think we are willing to admit, our real intent in passing on particularly negative information about somebody else is that we are speaking to hurt rather than to help. Though we wouldn't say it that way, maybe wouldn't see it or admit it to ourselves, we derive some subtle little pleasure from saying something that causes somebody else to have a lower opinion of this person that we don't have a very high opinion of to start with. Several weeks ago, somebody shared some information with me about a congregation in another part of the country that I'd had some serious concerns about for a long, long time. I have very dear friends who worship there, but everything that I could learn about that congregation indicated to me that they were in the process of leaving the Lord. But there were many people, I think because of personal friendships, who defended this congregation and said, oh, they're okay. Just don't worry, they'll be all right. Now, some information is now coming to light that indicates not only are they leaving the Lord, but they're leaving the Lord much quicker than anybody dreamed in their worst nightmare. And it was all I could do to keep from getting on the phone and calling some people and saying, you remember what I told you? I wasn't just imagining things, it's true. Well, I had to refrain myself from doing that. Maybe those conversations need to be held. Information will ultimately come to light, I'm persuaded. But why would I do that? Why would I pass on that information to somebody else, if not to just subtly gig somebody a little bit for not having believed me in the first place when I said that was the way I assessed the situation? Proverbs 12, verse 18. One of the most vivid passages in Proverbs, I think, says, there is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. For the tongue of the wise promotes health. Who is the person who speaks like the piercings of a sword? Now, that's a person who speaks in a way that will pierce the sword into somebody else. Figuratively, somebody who speaks in a way that hurts. Usually covering that with a great mantle of humility and desire to do good and to speak the truth. But deep down, the intent is to say that which brings somebody down in some kind of a way and sort of puts them in their place. It's hard to be honest about our motives. The intent to hurt may be so slight or so subtle that we ourselves don't even recognize that what we're doing is striking, maybe defensively, maybe trying to get even, or pulling somebody down who has some kind of an advantage over us, or even having fun at somebody else's expense. Several months ago, somebody, a very dear friend of mine, I changed my profile picture on Facebook several times recently, and this person wrote humorously to say, well, you know, Gary, the problem with getting a good profile picture is having a good profile to start with. Well, that was humorous, I guess, if you don't have my profile. But I didn't enjoy it. You know, it was not humorous to me. And it was all I could do to lash back at him with a little gig that would just bring to prominence some of his physical characteristics. Why do we say some of the things we say? We speak like one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. Is our intent, however slight and subtle that may be, to hurt? Well, the tongue is a mighty powerful thing, can it? It can do great good, and it can do great harm. The very power of it, the potential of it for good, indicates that there's huge potential for harm if it's not used in a good way. And so, before we say anything, we ought to just say, what's the point? What's my real reason for saying this? Well, another question that you could add to the list is this one. Before we say something, to ask, is it kind? If it's true, is it kind? That would eliminate a lot of things too, wouldn't it? Matthew chapter 12, Jesus said that we're going to be called to account for every idle word that we have said. That's going to make for a long interview at Judgment Day in the case of a lot of people who've said a lot of idle words, and it just scares me to death when I think about the accountability involved in having said and written as many words as I have as a gospel preacher. I'll have to answer for every one of them. And it's a fearful thing. Thing that makes me never want to say or write anything ever again. Gossip is more than a slightly bad habit. We joke about it. We have lighthearted comments about it, and I expect after this lesson there'll be jokes about it. Don't expect me to laugh about them, because I don't like for a serious sermon to be, for the point of it to be diffused by just kind of releasing it by joking about it. This is a serious sin. There'll be people who'll be lost because of their unwillingness to rein in their tongue and refrain from saying things that didn't need to be said or weren't true or didn't need to be said by them. Gossip is responsible for a whole bunch of the strife that's in the world. If you could take gossip out of the world, a lot of the discord that's in the world would just disappear. For lack of fuel, the fire would go out. And Proverbs talks about that. Gossip harms both the gossiper and others, whose relationships are damaged by the gossip. Proverbs 20, verse 19 says that we ought not only not to be talebearers, but we ought to stay away from talebearers. Not participate in their activity by listening to things that don't need to be said to us. So 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 11, Paul is talking to people who thought that the Lord was shortly to return, and so many of them had apparently quit their jobs, and they were just sitting around waiting for the Lord to return, didn't have anything else to do except to be talking and meddling in other people's affairs. And the Lord, Paul counseled them that when the Lord does return, he needs to find all of us working and minding our own business, doing things that need to be done. So most of us, certainly myself included, could afford to speak fewer words than we do. And I think over all of it needs to be the statement in Luke chapter 4 and verse 22, where it was said that the people marveled at the gracious words that fell from the Lord's lips. You may or may not have agreed if you'd listened to the Lord preach. People might not have agreed with what he said, but they couldn't fault him for the graciousness of the way that he used the gift of communication and speech. Ephesians 4 verse 29, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but only what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Well, thank you for listening to that lesson. Maybe some of that didn't need to be said, but I hope that you'll be patient with me about that. Brother Luther Blackman used to So he didn't preach, he just made assaults with the attempt to preach. And that's about all I do sometimes. But I think this is an important subject, that the practical level impinges on most of our lives, on almost every day that we live. If you're here tonight and there is some way in which we can assist you in obeying the Lord's will, we want to provide an opportunity, an invitation at the end of every lesson that's taught in this building, for anybody to obey the gospel. We never know. Somebody might be here and they're just on the verge of taking that step to do what they know they should have done already. If you're here tonight and we can help you to take some step of obedience that the Lord requires of you, we hope you'll come while we stand and sing.
Father, when my clumsy footsteps